People are the go-to recruitment agency in the food industry, working with top UK businesses and speaking with great candidates every day.
With expert dedicated teams for each business function, they can help you find your next opportunity or the best candidates for your business.
Visit www.morepeople.co.uk to view current roles, to get to know the team and find out more. Welcome to the O for Food's Sake podcast, where we unwrap the joys and struggles of working in the food industry so you can thrive in what you do best while sustaining a rewarding and fulfilling career or business. We are your hosts, Lucy Wager, food industry consultant,
and Amy Wilkinson, food industry coach. We've worked in the food industry for the last 20 years, and we're here to share with you the benefit of our hindsight. Our podcast is for you to find new ways to cope with the daily struggles, but mostly to inspire you to work on what's not working to ultimately improve your career or business long term. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of O for Food's Sake. Today we have a guest and I'm really excited because it is Barbara Bray, MBE, definitely our first MBE. Is what's the word for it? Is it award winner? But anyway, very excited to have Barbara here. So Barbara and I met on LinkedIn. I was just saying before we hit record,
I don't go out anymore.
I'm just on LinkedIn. But we've probably been following each other for about a year. And then a couple of months ago, we were like, should we have a real live chat? And then it was like, you definitely need to come on the podcast, Barbara. So welcome, Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. Lovely to meet you.
Thank you. And thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. So you, Barbara, are going to talk to us today a little bit about your history. Like everybody always likes to hear about your career history and stuff like that. But you're here really to talk to us today about making people healthier with food, effectively, aren't you? So, and there's two kind of real key areas that you focus on, so around healthy aging, nutrition and sustainability. So we're really, really excited to have you here. So just tell us about yourself as a starting point. Well, that sounds like an interview. I always think it sounds like an interview when you say that. Just tell us about what you do and a bit of a history of how you got to where you are.
Sure. I started life as somebody who's really keen about food. So as a child, I loved eating it, going into the garden and helping my parents grow different things, going to pick your own at the local farm and getting some raspberries and all that side of it. And unfortunately, as a child, you don't really know what your career options are, do you? You kind of say, when I grow up, I'm going to do something with food. And I was quite lucky in that my school, when they were doing the careers planning for the careers day that you do at 15, they said, well, said to all the kids, who do you want? And I said, well, I want to do something with food. So they got in this lady who worked in the dairy sector, in the dairy industry, and she was a food scientist. And she must have spent well over an hour talking to me about her career. And by the time she finished, I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to Reading. I'm going to do food science. I'm going to be a food scientist. And as you know, when you have these life plans, there's always something that slightly derails them. And yeah. I didn't get the grade I needed in chemistry. So I ended up applying for food science and getting it accepted for food technology, which was a whole different ball game. So 21 has got results week. Is it this week or next week?
Yeah.
Don't panic. There's always a solution.
Yeah, there's always a plan B. And often the plan B is better than the original plan.
Yeah. Exactly. So food technology suited me down to the ground because it meant that because it was multidisciplinary and that you did the microbiology side, the marketing side, the management, there were so many things and skills that you learned. When you go into industry, you find that you're able to apply yourself a lot better. And it's very much designed for entrepreneurs and people who think outside of the box. But as it turned out, I was really more interested in the produce side. So I went back to university and did a master's in post-harvest technology, then went and worked abroad working with farmers who were kind of subsistence farmers and looking at improving the quality of their crops so that they stored better and you get better outcomes for families in those environments. And then went into...
Sorry to interrupt, just really interested. Whereabouts did you go when you went abroad to do that?
I went to Uganda, so I worked for an organisation that was working with Ugandan farmers and trying to improve the quality of their crops. And then from there, I stayed in Uganda and worked for an export company that was exporting things like fresh beans and courgettes to the UK. And that was at the time in the 90s where fresh cut produce and sending things from Kenya and what have you, that was really in its infancy. It was a fledgling industry, really exciting. There was a lot of growth. It's when we designed all the kind of packaging that was modified atmosphere and all those kind of things came into existence that we're now rowing back on because they're plastic and it's flying things over the world. It's interesting how things have come full circle and we're now looking at regenerative agriculture and checking what the carbon footprint and the emissions is on all food. And I think my interest in that started because of that history. And when I came back to the UK, I worked for Bakkavor, again, a chilled fresh produce company, and spent a lot of time in that sector. But it wasn't until, you know, Bakkavor went through so many changes and restructures, it wasn't until that happened at a factory that I was based at that I got the opportunity to take voluntary redundancy and set up my own consultancy. So I thought, right, had enough of this. I'm going out on a limb, going out on my own. I think I worked
better. See where we go on, because that's basically what I did. Sam's company.
But I think you also know when it's the right time to step away from what you're doing, because I could have gone and done same thing in a different place and that wouldn't have worked. My dad was actually like, why are you looking for the same job that you were trying to leave anyway?
Do you think there was, it was a fire in your belly that was about one, like what made you want to go out on your own? That's, it's quite interesting because we did an episode on becoming self-employed, which obviously both me and Lucy have done. And actually it was one of the quickest downloads. And actually we know people that actually made the decision to do exactly what me and you did. What was it that about going it alone that was attractive for you?
I like the idea that I could pick and choose the type of work that I did, so I could focus on what I was really good at, because people aren't going to pay you for what you're not good at. They, you know, they either want to work with you or they don't. There's no messing about trying to warm people up and work with people you can't really work with, because if they don't want to work with you, they won't. So it's almost like you're always bringing your A game to your A client. And I learned very quickly how to work out who is a good client for me and who isn't. You know, some people aren't bothered. They just want any old consultant in to fix something and they don't really want to work with you. They just want X problem to go away, but don't give you the support and resources or the team. And that's not for me. It's me. I want to work with people who do want to make positive changes and they want that help and that mentoring and that support to help their business grow. And I found quite quickly it wasn't just technical issues that people wanted solving or not necessarily training people in a specific technical skill. It was more around developing people and making sure that they can also bring their A game to work. And that comes in all sorts of shapes and forms. So my consultancy has developed over time. And yes, I do more on nutrition and sustainability because that's the way things have started to trend. But I've also seen the benefit of sitting down with somebody and working out what is the root cause of their problem before we tackle the head on, I don't know enough about X technical issue or Y nutrition issue. And that's always been the case for the last few years.
Really interesting.
So
you've been doing that for a number of years now, and I know it sounds, well, you haven't even talked about your MBE, so you need to tell us about that.
I was just going to ask about that. I was like, where does the MBE fit in? Because it sounds like you've got a really interesting, what you offer is really well-rounded because you're looking at like a real holistic view. Which is quite unusual. And I was just thinking, I wonder, like, how does the MBE fit into all of this?
Well, with my consultancy, I'd got to the point where I kind of knew what I was doing and I was doing a lot of the same old, same old. And I'm very much a project person. Around once every 5 years, I have to land a big new thing. Otherwise, I start to get bored. And I'd had it in the back of my mind for a while that I wanted to do a Nuffield Farming Scholarship. So a friend of mine, who's also a Nuffield Farming Scholar, had done one back in 2006. And I knew that the age limit or the age range is up to 45. And I kind of thought, I'm running out of time. I need to apply for this. And I applied and I got it on the first attempt, which is practically unheard of. Normally people have to, sorry.
So I was just going to say, can you tell us what that is? Because I don't actually know what that is.
So Nuffield Farming, you'll have heard of Nuffield because Nuffield Health is an organisation. Yeah. The background is Lord Nuffield owned Morris Minor Company and he made a lot of money, and being a philanthropist, he put that into health, but he also put some money into agriculture. So he sponsored, created this charity that gives money to people to go and study a particular topic, and it's a travel scholarship. So you travel the world looking at what food and farming topics of interest there are and bring back the best practice or the new knowledge back to the UK and disseminate it.
Wow.
So that's the principle of it. And it's tough going. It's a proper hero's journey. So like when you set off on any journey, you have a question that you want to ask and you've got the countries that you want to travel to. But obviously as a person, you grow and develop over time and you realise that the question you asked has got several different answers and you've seen new things. And for me, I was looking at vegetables for specific nutritional need. But what I was finding was that we need to all plug into a food system, and that food system needs to work better in the way it values vegetables and the way in which we eat, our food environment, our health, our social patterns, looking at nutrition smart agriculture where you're improving the nutritional quality of crops and of food in general, but not to the detriment of the farmer. And that's almost like a precursor to sustainable nutrition, because you're not just looking at human health and financial health of the farmer, you're also looking at environmental health. And back in kind of, you know, 2017 sort of time, people weren't necessarily focusing on that, and over time that has become a lot more important. Yeah. We're seeing more people focus on it, but at the time that I wrote my study and did my scholarship and started bringing this information to my sector, that was fairly new. A lot of people weren't involved in it. And because of that, I was nominated by DEFRA for an MBE, and I was absolutely stunned when I got them.
Wow.
I didn't know it was them, and I found out subsequently, and they sent me a lovely letter afterwards and said, you know, we admire what you've been doing and we've been watching you. And it all sounds a bit scary, doesn't it?
That's incredible. Wow. I mean, that is incredible. That's given me goosebumps listening to that, because just incredible. And when you say back in 2017, I know exactly what you mean, because I'm really interested in the sustainability side of things, because I've done a project with it on that with one of my clients, and I started that in 2020, and just in that period of time I've seen the difference in the industry and people's knowledge. So for you to have been doing that in 2017, I really understand what a huge, you know, unknown that was back then, and the impact that you would have had bringing that knowledge back. So yeah, incredible.
Thank you. It has, like I said, it's been a massive journey, and helping people to understand that you don't work in silos. And every industry, I'm sure, has this, where you focus on discussing things within your own sector and you stay in your lane, because professionally you're trained to stay in your lane. But what I realised was this food system piece means that you have to liaise with retail, with consumers, with scientists. Everybody has to come to the table and make sure we're all working towards the same end goals. Otherwise, you get issues with inequality and with people saying, well, this particular metric from the environment is more important than that metric, and it's not balanced. And systems thinking is incredibly important, but there aren't many people who do systems thinking.
It's actually a lot more complex than any of us actually give it credit for, I think. And I do wonder whether that's because food, you know, food is something that we all need. It's a commodity. We just go and buy it, we eat it. You know, it's quite throwaway. And I wonder whether that's, you know, that's why we don't give it the complexity it deserves because of that. Like, do other industries, what do you think, do other industries give more credit? I don't know, give more time to the complexity? Or
isn't there a big part of it that comes down to money?
Yeah.
Commercialism.
But yeah, you know, and I think that's the problem as well, isn't it?
That's the reality, is that, like you say, it's staying in your lane, but it's also each business worrying about their own profitability and not necessarily thinking about the greater good.
I think that's right. And when you look at the number of businesses that have gone down the route of B Corp, so if you think there's some businesses that have really focused a lot of energy in saying we're part of the B Corp community, because that is about getting certification to say that you are focusing on the greater good. And even businesses that aren't doing that are still looking at how they can help feed people who have less money. And that's going to become a lot more important. And although people slate multinationals and say, well, they're all quite greedy and what have you, they know that in order for them to be sustainable, they have to be able to sell food products.
Yeah.
And they're in the business of making sure that happens. Unfortunately, as people's incomes reduce, then I'm pretty sure the quality of what people are able to buy will change with time. And that is my concern. It's that the healthiness of people's diets will go down because healthier food tends to be more expensive. And if you're time poor, or you haven't got a whole suite of skills or the support network around you to design your food, design your diet around, you know, a particular lifestyle, then it's hard to eat well consistently, especially when you haven't got everything lined up in your favour. The number of hurdles that are in front of people now in order to get to a healthy diet are so many. And when I did my TEDx talk, I talked about how the food environment shapes your choices. And the role I've got now, so I'm currently doing a PhD and looking at healthy ageing diets. Within that PhD, I do a professional internship with DEFRA. And I had to pick something that's nothing to do with my PhD. So I picked social science. So I'm now with social scientists learning about that side, and they talk about food practices because they know that where you live, your income, your education, all of those things, not just your food environment, impact your food practices. And by that I mean how you decide what you're going to eat, where you get it from, how you access it, who you eat it with, that all plays a part. So you think you're making choices, but actually your choices are within certain lanes, and you have certain that you don't necessarily see, but that's because your lifestyle is shaped in a certain mold. And unless you're able to break that mold, it's very difficult to change your food practices. So when I hear people say, oh, well, you know, if only people cooked from scratch, or if only they bought more fresh veg, there's reasons why people are in that situation. And it's not because they haven't thought about getting a couple of carrots in. That's so... the reason.
It's so patronizing, isn't it, to kind of even think that, you know. And it's totally from a place of privilege to be going, oh well, you just go and buy some carrots, you know.
I know, but I think people don't realize that that's how it comes across, because you're seeing it through your own lens of what you would do, which isn't the same for everybody else. And so I'm learning so much about social science right now that I can then apply to what I'm doing. And also what I'm realizing is that there are certain things that happen as we get older, and certain changes that we also don't realize, and how we prepare for older age is woeful. In fact, I learned a phrase which I absolutely love, is that we are unconsciously incompetent about aging, because we kind of assume that our lives will carry on in a certain pattern, or we might make a random decision to go and live in rural France because we think that's really nice. But every change that you make impacts on your quality of life and your lifestyle. And actually, healthy diets are really impacted by our social setting and what's around us. So if you break your social setting, or there's certain things that impact your lifestyle, then as you age, you will either reduce, for example, your social ability to go and have a meal with somebody, or reduce the types of food that you eat because you've been widowed. And there's certain things that will impact on that that I hadn't even thought about when I started my research into healthy aging and diets. And we glibly say, oh, when I'm 65, I'm going to retire, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. We have no idea how that's going to impact on our health and the way that we eat and our social systems.
And it's also, and it'd be interesting to hear if this is part of what you're studying and stuff, is, you know, at what point do we call ourselves aging? Because you're aging effectively from birth, aren't you? And I know, you know, we had the podcast on the menopause, and talking about that sort of, you know, between 30 and 50 kind of for women, where we were talking about the decisions that you make at that point having a massive effect on your health in your 70s and 80s. So is that part of what you're looking at? Like, or is it, you know, obviously we all know we need to be eating and eating healthily and doing the right things. But a lot of us aren't doing that.
No, it's a really, no, really good point.
Is there a point because, at which it's like you've really got to up your game now?
Yeah.
Well, that's where my podcast, Women Positively Aging, comes in. Because, yes, you are aging from the moment you're born. But the point at which it becomes apparent is really in your mid-40s, where people are Googling, what can I do to sort of improve my lot? Mm-hmm. And I realise that there is a sweet spot there. If you start in your mid-40s, you can affect better changes. But it's not simply just about changing your diet. It's a whole suite of things you need to think about that help make it sustainable. And it's difficult because when you use the word diet, people assume you mean weight loss. And I don't mean weight loss. Mm-hmm. I mean about aligning the different types of foods that you're going to regularly have in your space, so that when you choose them, that's adding value all the time. So you're eating in a way that is good for you, that's accessible all of the time, and that you enjoy, because eating is so much more than fueling your body. It's the cultural side of it, it's the emotional side. So you're also having to make sure that all of those things are aligned, and you can easily have meals that nourish you consistently. In my research, what I found is that around 1 in 10 people over the age of 65 are malnourished or at risk of malnutrition. And that's quite severe. And it shows the impact of lifestyle on dietary choices. And when I look at my mother, for example, so she has dementia, and there are days when I'm just quite happy where she tells me I've had a pot of custard for lunch because she's accessed some food. And it's difficult when you start to develop chronic illnesses and conditions to carry on eating in a healthy way, because the way that which you access food is really dependent on the diseases and illnesses that you have. So I think it's important for us when we're in midlife to kind of say, well, this is where I'm at, and the decisions that I make now will influence how I age and what type of a pathway I will take into aging, whether it will be beset with a few chronic illnesses, because you tend to get more than one. So you might get type 2 diabetes and a heart condition, arthritis. Mm-hmm. There are various things that may happen. And the longer you can wait and prevent those things from coming into your life, the better it is. So at 45, if you do start to make changes and increase the level of exercise and socialize with a group of people who do help you feel good about yourself, you will make inherently better decisions about your food as well.
Mm-hmm. So it isn't just about what you do, it's about who you hang around with as
it
well.
Mm-hmm.
I can totally see that, because I, you know, if I think I've actually changed a little bit, and like a lot of my social life used to be based around the pub and drinking and eating and like, but not eating good stuff, you know, and I can see how that has a massive effect.
And
it's interesting, because I always think that you sort of see, don't you, people mid-40s, they either like go super active and like get into cycling and do this, that and the other, or like turn into complete couch potatoes.
Yeah.
So we need and to I be think going down that, the cycling route.
That I'm 40 this year, and I'm really noticing, like, I think you have a lot more, you've got a lot more slack in your 20s and 30s. So you can basically abuse your body and you kind of recover very, very quickly. And then it's really interesting, you're sort of saying 45 onwards, because I've got the benefit of, I've got an older sister. My husband's nearly 2 years older. I spend a lot of time talking to Amy, and I'm feeling quite lucky. I'm feeling quite lucky that I feel like I need to ease myself into this, like, need to be healthier and make better choices, because I even now I'm noticing that I just don't have as much slack. So I feel like this is a really important conversation, because those people that are in their 30s listening to this, like, be under no illusion that this is going to happen to you. And it's just
that's the reality, isn't it? We're actually lucky if we're aging.
Yes.
But it doesn't necessarily feel like it when it feels like bits of you are falling off and you can't string a sentence together.
But it's you know, and it happens, you know, I feel like, and it probably is as well, I don't think it's a coincidence that obviously we've both got young children as well, Amy. That also takes its toll. So, like, you don't get as much sleep, and there are just things that you don't take for granted, but actually it does make a big impact. And you do need to look after yourself more than you did when you were 25 to 35. You know, you really do.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And it's that self-care piece. And because it's also the squeeze generation. So in our family, the weekly call is all about who's looking after who. You know, there's never any time. Yeah. 10 years ago, it was all about which spa are you going to for the weekend? And
and now it's like, I'm exactly the same. It's like I'm either talking to my sister about how, if she's looking after my daughter, or who's going to go and look after a poorly parent. You know, it's that, it's that squeezing.
And
middle.
That's the thing, because there's no give. So if I say to my parents, oh, I'll nip in and I'll do X, Y, and Z, and then I'm going to go and spend a weekend elsewhere and just have a bit of downtime, they'll look at me as if to say, well, why do you need that? Like, because of you.
So tell us a bit more about the your podcast, because it's quite new, isn't it? I've listened to it, and I am going to be one of, well, I already am one of your subscribers, but you know, but what are you covering in that podcast?
The first series I designed purely around health issues. So gut health, for example, we've already done, and looking at belly fat. So we had somebody talking about the importance of recognizing belly fat and working your way around it, and having that acceptance that where you're at needs to be a point of, this is what is an issue and how can I improve my health going forward? Not necessarily about weight loss, but just about making sure that you're doing the right things to maintain a healthy body. We've also looked, well, I'm going to be looking at social isolation and loneliness, because again, that's another thing that if you make poor decisions in your midlife, that can have a huge impact on you as you age. Brain health and heart health as well. And we looked at moving, and that's to me one of the downloads that people haven't really engaged with. I'm quite surprised, because it was all about people in midlife getting back into movement. And I kind of thought with the Olympics, or sorry, not Olympics, the Commonwealth Games, people would be looking back on their youth and thinking, oh, how can I at least engage with that couch to 5K, or find some way of getting off the couch and doing something that will stimulate me and make me feel a bit happier and healthier. So I'm hoping that more people will engage on that whole moving and aging well, because it is so important. So my second series is really looking at the things that people have engaged with and the requests that are coming through. So I've already had a request for bone health, and I'm pretty sure it'll carry on down that health theme. So the things that people can do to help improve the quality of their health, because we won't necessarily all get the same issues as we age. How we look after ourselves will determine a lot of it, but there are also some things that are hereditary, and I think it's important to look at where you are and what health status you have and how you manage holding a certain health status and what's under your control and what isn't. So I think that's really important. But I've had some really good response so far from listeners.
I was just going to ask, you're talking about hereditary and you and your like your personal health perspective. What's your view on blood tests that you can get done to understand where you're at the moment, like what your personal profile is, and using that as a way to determine what you should be doing?
I think a lot of that technology, it's in its infancy. There are standard things that the doctor can do for you. So, for example, your HbA1c, and we talk about that in the belly fat episode, because that will give you an indication of whether you're pre-diabetic or already developed type 2 diabetes. So that's a really important one to do anyway. But there are also other indicators, for example, things like blood pressure, looking at vitamin D levels. So you can get a blood test for that. And again, vitamin D status in people in midlife is not necessarily great, especially for women. It's important to make sure that you take a vitamin D supplement. That's the one thing where it's hard to get naturally, because we don't live in a really sunny climate and we're all rushing around. We tend not to sit and just relax in the sun. And exactly. I mean, it's not going to happen, is it? So a supplement is your best route, because it's also hard to plan your diet, so you're getting it from dietary sources. So there'd be a couple of tests that I would recommend. The others, I think the jury is still out in terms of evidence as to how you can use that information and whether the quality of that information that is given you, because certain things will change according to time and where you're at, and they aren't necessarily proven to be useful. But with things like the HbA1c and the vitamin D, definitely. Cholesterol, again, it depends a little bit on your family history, because, you know, my cholesterol might be different to yours, not necessarily because of diet, but just because that's the starting point. So you have to work with your healthcare professional to work out what is right for you and what you can do about it, whether it's going to be having some plant steroids in your diet and buying, you know, the yogurts and the margarine type products that contain that, or whether it's down the statins route. So there are ways of controlling it as well, so all is not lost. But I think anything else outside of that, you're probably playing around a bit with luck and judgment rather than actual science.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
And from a, you know, obviously a lot of our listeners work in food manufacturing and retail and all of that sort of stuff. Do you think, I guess there are products on the market already, aren't there? You know, the things that have got those things added or whatever you need. Do you think it is an area that is going to grow, or do you think it is an area that people should be looking at and really like age specific products being, I don't know how you market them without being like, oh, she's got all the granny stuff in her trolley. But do you think that, you know, there is a real need for that to be able to, you know, looking at that, the wider picture that you were talking about, like the health of the nation, we actually are going to need to start thinking about life stage and creating products for life stage.
There's definitely an interest in it. And I've been asked to do a masterclass on that product development piece. So how do you look at the types of things that we'll need to cater for in people's diets? But it's not just about looking at it from an age banding. It's also about the type of benefit you're going to get. So with the plant sterols, we know from a cholesterol point of view, that's going to be helpful. And cholesterol doesn't necessarily hit you at 45, 55. So it's anybody who knows that they're going down that higher cholesterol piece will be wanting to focus on those types of foods. And it's the same with other issues. So it might be to do with brain health, people putting claims on, or not necessarily having to put claims. If you've got the right types of food in your basket, that will already be quite helpful. So do listen out for my brain health episode, because I'll be talking about that. But I think food businesses can look at the types of ingredients they can incorporate into their recipes and design products around to make sure that if you're wanting to focus on people who are interested in brain health, you have got those products as part of a meal plan or part of a recipe that can deliver that. So whether we'll go straight down the route of saying over 65s shop down this aisle, not sure.
the aging
There's
aisle.
Definitely a whole range of things that we can do to customize foods for specific types of health outcomes or health improvements.
It's interesting though, because I did see a brand recently. I can't remember what it's called, but it's called something like Grampy Bar. So it, like, do you know the one I mean?
Yes.
And it's specific. Do you know what it's called? It's something like
and
it, that.
The name has completely gone from my head.
But it's something it like is, that, isn't it? Which immediately makes you think, oh, that sounds like grandma or grandpa or something. And then I looked at it and it actually is for older people. Yes. And I was like, actually, I quite like this. It's the first brand that I've seen that is specifically, and I thought, I wonder what that population of consumers think about that.
Well, they obviously like it. They want a taste award. I'll give you the link to put in your show notes, actually, because I did have some contact with them just last week, actually. And in some countries, they do. I was talking to somebody from Portugal in retailing, and she was saying that there they do want to have a sign on the outside of packaging so they know that it's appropriate or age appropriate. Because, for example, if you think of older people who want to have smaller portions because they've got smaller appetites, they might go shopping down the kind of toddler aisle, but that type of food is totally inappropriate for that age group. So it is helpful to signpost in that way, but it can be quite divisive because not everybody wants to shop like that. There are obviously people who do, but you know, you may end up losing some customers if you do it that way. It's a tricky balance to have, but
it is. But I guess you could say that about any convenience type food that's, you know, like some people don't want to buy ready meals because they've got a thing about, you know, scratch cooking, but it's just not for them. They just walk past. So
I think the jury is still out about how it will be marketed, but the easiest solution is to market to a particular health improvement outcome rather than an age group, because everybody ages differently, and it's hard to chuck all 65-year-olds in one group and all 75 a minute. You know, that's hard to do anyway. You always have segmentation within a sector as it is. But I think people will naturally start to find the place for how they market and who's attracted, because you know who's buying the product because of all the loyalty cards and things like that. So the data is there, but obviously what you won't necessarily know is whether somebody has high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high HbA1c, you know, are they trying to modify their diet for type 2 diabetes? So it's difficult to know the motivation behind certain choices. And also if people are in a mixed household, you wouldn't necessarily know who's going to eat the different things in the bathroom.
Yeah, or buying for a very elderly relative as well.
It feels like a very, like, complicated health study that needs to, like, match up with some panel data somewhere, doesn't it? And work all of that stuff out.
I'll be doing some panels later in the year, so I'll hopefully get a bit of an insight into that.
Oh, amazing. Brain health is a really interesting one as well, isn't it? Because I imagine it's quite difficult to make claims around that. There's not many products making brain health claims in the UK, at least. But there's a supplement company, I think, called Heights or something that's very focused on brain health. And it's definitely an area that I find really interesting, because I think it's a bit like the gut health thing, isn't it? It feels like it's ripe for being sort of exploding.
I think you're right, because when you think of the last couple of years, people have been under a lot of pressure. And also when you're going through the menopause, there's that brain fog and lack of concentration. So I think lack of concentration is definitely something that any age group of people can identify with. But obviously, as you get older, people are worried about losing cognition, because that could be a precursor to dementia. So the more you do to protect yourself in that time period where you can effectively manage it, the better. That can come from food, it can come from supplements, but again, it's also lifestyle. So it's, if you are sitting down in front of the TV for 6 hours a day, that's not going to help your cognition. you don't need a specialist to tell you that.
How to work it out. You need to be exercising the brain a bit more than that. Yeah.
But even being outside and exercising is helpful.
I'm feeling quite, what's the word? I'm a bit reassured, just because I am taking vitamin D. I'm taking omega-3s because I don't get enough in my diet, because I can't stand fish. So it makes it quite difficult. So I'm starting, I definitely need to exercise more and all of that sort of stuff. But it is great to know that I'm doing some, particularly as I haven't quite hit the 45, I'm doing some of the things right. We've just got to, you know, it is funny, isn't it? It's exactly as Lucy said, you just don't think about these things when you're younger. And then as you get older, it's like all of a sudden it's like, oh.
I really think there's a bit of a, oh, that won't happen to me. Oh, that won't happen to me.
Exactly, and that's
funny. I mean, I used to think that. Yeah. And I'm so ashamed that I used to think that.
And that's where this piece around, you know, we're unconsciously incompetent about aging comes from, because
yes,
that's, you think I've yeah, a pension perfect. Plan and that's all you need. Well, no, that's not all you need.
Those out as well. No, it's really, really interesting. Now, you haven't told us about the other. I mean, I don't know how one woman does all of this stuff. Like, you are superwoman. You definitely deserve that MBE. But the healthy, sustainable side of what you do. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, during lockdown, I set up a LinkedIn page with Jackie Green, who's another consultant focusing on transformation and coaching people, and Mark Driscoll, who is a sustainability consultant, and Amy Culliford, who's a public health nutritionist. And what we did was we started putting broadcasts together with Beanstalk Global around bringing people from different disciplines to look at how we can improve access to healthy and sustainable food. And over time, that's grown. So we do the broadcast, but also on the LinkedIn page, we're trying to network people together and show people examples of what can be done. And it's nice that we're now building a community, and we'll carry on doing broadcasts. We'll be working with a different partner going forward into 2023. But I'm finding that on the LinkedIn page, people can bounce ideas around and also learn from it. And it's not just, oh, well, I've listened to a webinar, I'm going to try and take that back into my own business and share it with my colleagues. It's starting to become a place where people can share what they've learned and have that dialogue with other businesses. And the beauty of it is we've now started to bring in people from the pharmaceutical sector, finance sector, education, manufacturing, farmers and growers. So it is becoming more and more multidisciplinary. And I know quite a few sustainability professionals have joined as well. So it's also going to be a good place to find a sustainability professional, because they're also commenting and looking at what we're doing. And it's just helpful, because within my journey as well, what I've realized is sometimes you just want to bounce an idea off somebody. And recently I was doing a piece of work for a company and they wanted to look at product development and how you integrate health and sustainability into the briefs and design process. I just put it out there on the LinkedIn page and said, what's missing from this system? And people said, you need consumers. You need... It's like, great, free consultancy. I'll just add that.
But it is, it's that. And actually, when you ask people for help, people are happy to help, aren't they? And it sounds like what you're doing there is really creating that sense of community and collaboration that we were saying earlier can be missing. You know, that because companies that are only thinking in a commercial way are, we want to keep all of this information to ourselves and not share it with anyone. And you've created an open forum for stuff to be shared. So that's great.
And we'll have lots of fun with it, especially into next year when we start doing a whole lot of broadcasts that really people will have to think about what they're doing. I think up till now, it's been really easy to sit in one camp. So, for example, I'm all about carbon, or I'm all about water scarcity, or I'm all about, you know, slave labor. All of these things matter. You can't just cherry pick what you want. They're really important.
There's a lot of what you do is all about the bigger picture, isn't it? We always talk about the bigger picture. It's about all how all of those things interact with each other. So on the healthy aging side of things, but on the sustainability side as well, it isn't simple.
No,
but it's a good job we've got somebody as intelligent as you working on it.
And it is the future, isn't it? It's really exciting.
It is. And it's all about bringing the right people together who want to focus on that end goal and make sure that we all improve. And I think these societal shifts will start to become a lot more important and in focus, because people will realise that you can't do things as a single entity or as a single discipline. You have to collaborate.
And be open-minded to the other areas as well, isn't it? You can't just sit and have your view and kind of shut everybody else out, basically. You've got to embrace everything.
And that not everybody's going to agree with you, and that's fine. And you actually might learn something from that can feel a bit difficult sometimes, but it's important.
I think in midlife it gets easier to realize that not everyone agrees with you. I think you've left that playground mentality behind and you're like, I know there are people out there who don't agree with me or don't like me, and do I care? No, I don't.
It definitely is. I was talking to someone the other day, it's like you hit a certain age and you're just like, I don't really give a shit. Sorry, on a podcast, it's because I was swearing. But we don't, you know, and actually you can speak your mind a lot better once you stop caring what other people think of you.
Definitely.
Absolutely. So, Barbara, it's been so lovely talking to you today. And I feel like we need to ask you if there's anything else that you want to share with our listeners, knowing that they work in food manufacturers, in retail, in food service. Is there any sort of key messages that you would like them to take away today for what they can do?
I would say don't lose hope. Just realise that you can make changes and you can make a difference. Keep going. I know it's difficult at the moment, but just keep going, because no situation is permanent. There's always going to be a solution. So keep at it.
Yeah, it is a tough place to be right now, but We've all got each other's backs.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Barbara. I found it really, really insightful. I can't wait to follow you on LinkedIn, join the LinkedIn group, and just to have a look at everything and get some blood tests done.
So, Barbara, where should people find you? Well, obviously I found you on LinkedIn, but, you know, where do you want people to come and find you and remind people of the name of the podcast and all of that?
The podcast is Women Positively Aging, which you can find on Spotify, Apple, Google, and all your favourite podcast platforms. The LinkedIn page is Healthy and Sustainable Food, which you'll find plastered all over at the moment because we've been doing a bit of a recruitment campaign. And I have a website as well, which is www.alo-solutions.com, where you can see lots of resources and find out what I'm doing to help businesses develop products that we can put in front of people in midlife and older, and also learn a bit more about sustainable nutrition.
Great. Well, I'm sure lots of people will be getting in touch. Thank you so much, Barbara. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you on today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
thank
Barbara.
You.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
Thank you for joining us today, and we hope that this has been useful to you. As ever, we would love it if you could rate and review the podcast on your podcast app. It really does help us reach and support more foodies out there.
We'd also love it if you'd come and join us in the Facebook group, the O for Food Sake community. And if you want to get in touch with us personally, Lucy is available for consultancy advice and training and can be found on LinkedIn as Lucy Wager.
And if you want to reach out to Amy for any one-to-one coaching, group facilitation or training, then contact her on LinkedIn at Amy Wilkinson Coach. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
See you next time.
More People are the go-to recruitment agency in the food industry, working with top UK businesses and speaking with great candidates every day.
With expert, dedicated teams for each business function, they can help you find your next opportunity or the best candidates for your business.
Visit www.morepeople.co.uk to view current roles, to get to know the team and find out more.